As human beings, we're always looking for ways to become better versions of ourselves. For some, this means being healthier, fitter, managing illness, or eating better foods. For others, it's about looking good, progressing in a career, building a family, or winning a championship. While every person's goal might be different, there's a common theme that underlines every single one of these journeys, and it's something that's a base desire and a requirement for every person on the planet. We want to feel good. My name is Dan Campion, and I work in a field known as regenerative medicine. This type of medicine focuses on treatments that use the body's own ability to heal and regenerate itself. The goal of these treatments, whether we use them to regrow your hair, help your injured shoulder, or treat your wrinkles and lines, is to ultimately improve quality of life and increase what we call wellness. But that's not the only reason for this podcast. There's so much more to being well than just having a treatment. Think about all of the other factors that can help you feel good. Nutrition, exercise, sleep, even self-image. These are just a few of the many things that can and do contribute to your overall health and your wellness. And the one thing that helps tie all of this together for most of us is knowledge. Real and honest knowledge. We've all seen the latest fad diet, heard about the newest wonder treatment for skin, the magic hair growth shampoo, or the 40-second beach body program. But with so much information at our fingertips, how do you decide what's real and what's right for you? During this podcast, we're going to explore many of the different things that you can do to help you and those around you increase your own wellness and feel good. We're going to dive into the science and talk to experts in these different fields to find the answers to the questions that most people have when it comes to health, wellness, regenerative medicine, stem cells, nutrition, and everything that can contribute to a better you. Does it work? Can it help me? What's the real evidence here? Who can I talk to? What should I believe? This is a podcast about finding answers to human questions, taking control, and feeling good. This is the Human Regeneration Project. Okay, Dr. Sam Van Eden, thank you very much for joining me today on the podcast.
Welcome, Dan.
We obviously have worked together for a long time, and we're opening this forum to discuss wellness, regenerative medicine, all these different kinds of issues. For people who don't know you, Dr. Sam, will you give us a brief introduction, first of all, and then a little bit of history into your journey and how you got to where we are today?
Yeah. Well, I qualified origin in South Africa as a general practitioner. Did my basic medicine degree in University of Pretoria. Was very fortunate to do my housemanship at my postgraduate training as an intern in a very, very rural hospital. Our closest hospital would have been about 170 kilometers from our rural hospital.
Wow.
So as an intern working under very qualified and experienced surgeons and internists and doctors of medicine, and we were very privileged to have direct access to this incredible knowledge base. But still, you're a first-line hospital, so that means if there's a car accident, whether it's a ruptured spleen, liver, etc., you are the surgeon on call, and working with your qualified consultant surgeon is a wonderful experience for a young doctor to get hands-in and hands-on training firsthand. So the original experience that you have as a young doctor being exposed to this field has a huge effect on you, how you develop in your future. Now, some doctors stay general practitioners and very well qualified in that and doing well. But sometimes things trigger you. For me, the trigger was the way burn wound victims were treated and then starting to recover. And I suppose, looking back, that was the very first experience I had as a young doctor to firsthand see how you see this walk-in absolute disaster of a burn wound victim, and 6 months later, the person leaving hospital with a skin covering all those wounds. And where did this come from? Okay, they're transplants and hair skin transfers to the burn area. But a lot of that was just regenerative growth from their own skin. And it's just amazing when you're exposed to that, to firsthand experience that journey, and to realize this is possible in the human body.
Was that slightly different from what you would have learned in medical school in terms of, rather than treating an injury or an illness with a medication or that kind of by the books approach, you saw another aspect to what the body can do to heal itself?
Oh, absolutely. Because when you're in medical school, you are trained with the latest and the greatest in guidelines, the latest knowledge about treatment protocols. And all of them are just on paper, until you actually see them in reality. And that's sometimes where you realize what is on paper or in a guideline is not always applicable to every person. And every person has a different roadmap to recovery and is not necessarily going to follow that roadmap that you were taught in medical school. And this is the interesting thing that I realized only later in my life when I got more experience, that both doctor and patient are on the same journey to the same end goal, but we are completely coming from different planets. We are all space travelers, and in our way and roadmap to find that common solution, we are on completely different ways of thinking and expectation, etc. So, and guess what? Every journey you do with every person is slightly different. There is no two ways, just like a thumbprint, that exactly the same standard and of guideline applies to every person.
Yeah.
So yes, I think what helped me obviously is that I did a medical research degree in conjunction with my medical degree. And I originally thought, well, maybe that was now a waste of time, spending time and money on doing this. But then I realized only later, it is that question you ask as a scientist, why, when, how, that actually made my mind think differently than my colleagues. We would be on a ward round and my mind will go haywire on a different route, and I would ask the question and everyone would look at me and say, what planet are you from? You know, why did you ask that? And only to realize that is an incredibly interesting question, perhaps. And everyone enjoys the answer then, perhaps, if we find it.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, I think it is the combination of my science training together with my medical training that eventually led me then to crave for more knowledge, especially in the field of regenerative medicine.
You mentioned to me once before, I remember a story about a snake bite as well. And I think that might have had some influence on your kind of your direction with this journey too. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. If people ask me, how did you get onto regenerative medicine? You remember 25 years ago, this word regenerative medicine was actually non-existing. We were talking about the word healing. We had wound healing cascade and all kind of interesting knowledge that was starting to evolve around this topic of wound healing. But the word regenerative medicine and aesthetic medicine really didn't exist. So one of the answers I might give to people and say, how did you get into this field, is a very early experience I had as a young qualified doctor in this rural hospital, which was in northern South Africa, in a place called Giani. And around that area, there would be about 400,000 indigenous people. And we were the draining hospital. We were the primary care center for that. And one of the most common injuries that we would see nearly on a daily basis, especially in summer, would be snake bites. And the very dangerous puff adder, mamba, cobra would be very common injuries coming into the hospital. And It is very common for people in those areas to have a hut in their little village, which is absolutely designated as the water hut. So it has no windows, it has a door, and it has a thatch roof. And they would have these absolutely beautiful clay pots, which the women prepare. And I can tell you a story about that, how it's actually made. It's amazing, the art that goes and the knowledge that goes into the building a clay pot like that. And that holds the water. And when you put it down in this dark hut, it actually evaporates the cold air, and it cools down the water, and it leaves you with absolutely brisky, beautiful water, cold water on a very hot summer's day. But unfortunately, our friends, the snakes, also likes to cool off on a hot day like that. And they find their way out either through the thatch roof or under the door. And they would curl up around these clay pots. And unfortunately, when somebody enters into the dark hut, not knowing there was danger awaiting, they would stretch their hands out and lift the pot up with two hands. And that's exactly the point where these dangerous snakes, unfortunately, would hit a finger or a hand or even a forearm. And one of the amazing things that happens over this recovery period, that many of the people, unfortunately, lose a finger or the area where it was bitten, because especially the puff adder bite is a cytotoxic venom which breaks down the tissue, and they would just destroy that area of the limb. But interesting, especially in your older generation, after a bite like that, we realized that they are within 2-3 months would throw away their walking sticks, and if they could have Zimmer frames, the Zimmer frame would be out of the door, because they suddenly can start walking again. The limbs starts functioning better. The rheumatoid and osteoarthrosis, which they were suffering from, would just literally disappear over the next 2-3 months.
And they weren't necessarily being treated for these conditions?
Absolutely no treatment, for guideline treatments, well, at least. No guideline treatments for a person like that, but there's obviously in the venom a factor that healed those joints. And we see the same reaction in bee sting, where people got bee stings. And especially some of the South American bee sting species are very known for when you get stung by these bees, that it actually takes your rheumatoid arthritis away. And a lot of people actually use that as a treatment, stinging other people with the problem. But I suppose what triggered me is, again, the how is this possible? What is the mechanism? What is doing this? And I think it is the questions like that that excited a lot of researchers, including myself, to find out more about what is in our bodies that respond to an outside stimulus that can generate a renewal of the original tissue. And I suppose that is exactly the definition of regenerative medicine, is how can we trigger through an external trigger or stimulus a reaction in your body that is body own and that results in rejuvenation, restoration, and basically restoring function and reducing pain and just enlightening, obviously, a quality of life.
So you've mentioned that a lot of your peers at the time were treating in the traditional way or with the procedures and policies that you learned through medical school, and that you were also on a journey to treat people. Just, you're both going to end up at the same place, but you're taking different paths. With regenerative medicine and this kind of thing, what's the point of taking this particular path? What's your end goal here? What are you looking to give to your clients and patients that you feel you couldn't give them with the original path or the path that other people are taking? What are you trying to do here?
I think we should recognize that we're in our baby shoes when we talk about regenerative medicine. And we should also take note of the very, very conservative way of thinking within formal medicine. And gelling those two worlds of new knowledge into an established scientific environment is not an easy task. We've seen this with any introduction of any new ideas. For instance, If you introduce statins for cholesterol disease treatment, it took decades for that to become really mainstream treatment. And it only became a mainstream treatment as new publications were made available, when research came out, trials were done, and the level and quality of research improved over this period of time. But now we already see new papers coming out to say, well, there's no link between high cholesterol and heart disease. And why do you use anti-lipidic medication at all? So we're actually back to square one. It is a growing science. And this is very difficult for patients sometimes to grasp, and even more difficult for doctors to grasp, because a lot of my colleagues, including myself, we feel very comfortable within our guidelines that we were taught. And anything that is outside that is immediately made off as, oh, well, that is actually just not working. There's no science. There's no evidence. This can't be true. This can't be up. It seems to be good to be true, blah, blah, blah. And that is the problem that we have. We need to integrate theory and a postulation of a theory into science. And that's the challenge we have as young pioneers in regenerative medicine. And in theory, all doctors working in this field of restoration or regenerative medicine, in a way, are pioneers. We are not cowboys. We don't go outside of the guidelines of proper, safe treatments and to deliver treatments that's efficacious and that is actually restoring. But we don't always know how does it work. If a patient asks me exactly, Dr. Sam, how does the stem cells that you use and that is in your stem cell based therapy, how do they actually grow a new skin? I don't have all the answers. I don't think anyone really has all the answers. But yes, over a period of time, we will gain more knowledge, and that will bring us to delivering treatments that is also a good science base.
Yeah, what you're saying there rings very, very familiar to me and probably to lots of people, because it's not just unique to medicine. In every field and every walk of life, when something new comes along or something revolutionary comes along, there are naysayers and there are people who are uncomfortable with that. And as generally as humans, we're uncomfortable with what's new. But the only way to progress and to move forward is to explore that uncomfortable feeling and to find out what works and what doesn't work and to try them. And once we have a good level of trust with each other, and once, as you said, you're following the guidelines, this is how you move forward. This is how medicine and everything progresses, and yes, this is how absolutely treatments become better.
I think the word comfort zone is the biggest threat to medicine, yeah, is the biggest threat to science in general, because if everyone just stay within their comfort zone, we will still be treating people like in the 50s. Yeah. If it wasn't for the young pioneers, and sometimes older pioneers or mature pioneers within our field of medicine, I think we would have most likely not progressed our knowledge about medicine. So there is an appreciation between the patients on the one side that wants to see better treatments, want to see a more open-minded approach by doctors to their problem. But these people should also keep in mind there are very clear guidelines by the regulators, the medical councils, that expect of you as a doctor to be always delivering the highest standard according to best practice. And this is a very fine line. This is exactly where we need to be treading very carefully as practitioners registered with a medical council, to make always sure that your patient is safe, that you are able to do a treatment that is efficient and that delivers according to the expectation, that you are having a full consent, obviously, of the client, that the person is informed correctly to make an informed consent to the treatment. And as long as we stay within those guidelines, I can move out of my comfort zone of my traditional training. to actually step out and say, I still stick to good medical practice. I still stick to good quality treatments without compromising my patient safety and or the efficacy of my treatments. But I am recording and also noting and learning at the same time. And this is an important part of regenerative medicine. A lot of people would look at it and say, oh, that looks so easy. You know what? I'm not an actual doctor, and I'm actually not a nurse even, you know, but I am trained in, say, for instance, beauty therapy, and I can also do this dermabrasion. That looks so, it's so superficial. But that person doesn't realize that that skin type that she's working with perhaps is a very dangerous type of skin type that will result in pigmentation. And I suppose this is exactly the danger we have in our field of medicine. And that is why a lot of traditional doctors in their comfort zone, which is nothing wrong with, right, have a problem with a field like this. Because suddenly you have people that is not qualified starting to do treatments, including fillers, doing Botox, and not being a qualified doctor or a health professional that is legally entitled to perform those treatments. You have people outside of that professional body that start doing these treatments without any regulation. And we have seen that problem in the UK that led to different reports being the Keogh report is one of them, highlighting the exposure of the UK public to these rogue treatments, and there's no regulation. We have the same in Ireland. We're nothing different here. It's an unregulated industry. So anyone that thinks they can do it and that looks at the treatment and say, oh, that looks very easy, I can do that too, can basically do it. And that brings the industry into disrepute. This brings the regenerative medicine industry, in, whether you do nutrition, whether you do vitamin enhancement treatments, whether you do aesthetic treatments using stem cell-based therapies or any other way, it brings it into disrepute. Because suddenly, these qualified colleagues would look at this industry and say, what are you doing? Who are you allowing into the industry? We don't want to have anything to do with this. And that is exactly what we don't want in this industry.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent point, and I think it's a really, really important topic, because this is something we get asked all the time. But even that point you've just made and everything you've said so far, what the essence that's clear to me, and obviously the reason I'm here as well, is that what you're trying to do here is find ways to improve people's quality of life. At the end of the day, it's about quality of life, and obviously there's rules to follow to get there, but nobody goes into this field or any field of medicine to try and make anybody's life worse. Everyone is trying to improve the quality of life. Now, what we call that, I suppose, is wellness. We look at it as wellness, and it includes a range of things. Our specific field is regenerative medicine, as you've discussed now, but like you've touched on, nutrition, sleep, psychological well-being, that's what we do here. It is wellness and quality of life, and this is a tool for us, one of many tools, to help people achieve that kind of wellness. I suppose for me, a little bit about my background, I trained in the physiotherapy industry. I was dealing with a lot of sports injuries. And as soon as I qualified, I was very, very aware of the limitations of the field as well as the benefits of the field. So I didn't discount any of the treatments or anything like that. It's a very, very effective way of helping people with injuries and with chronic pain and things like that. But there is serious limitation to that. And I was immediately attracted to the idea that there's more you can offer these people. So what I found before I even met you or we discussed these kind of topics was when I spoke to a client who came in to me with, say, for example, an ankle issue or back pain or neck issues, they responded way, way better to any sort of treatment I did when they knew what I was doing and why I was doing it and the benefits that they could glean from it. So the knowledge that I gave to them was way more valuable than any hands-on treatment or exercise program or rehab that I could do with that person. And that immediately struck a chord at me as why are these people responding so much better? They took something from that knowledge, the the ability that I gave them to understand their issue and to understand where they're going to go and what they need to do to get there. So the first thing I noticed was compliance went through the roof. People were doing their exercises and they were coming back in and they were actually improving and getting better, not because I was a good therapist, but because they were simply doing the work I prescribed. And then exploring that a little bit more, I found other treatments and other ways of going about this that could enhance that for them. And my goal with these people, a lot of people I saw had chronic back pain and things like that, was to just to try and help them feel better and achieve whatever it was they wanted to achieve. And some people I dealt with were international level athletes, and some people were sedentary individuals who just wanted to get through a day without being uncomfortable. But they all had some sort of a goal, and by bringing them on this journey, I found that not just following the procedures and protocols, they were important, but adding some more aspects to that. That's where I came across this concept of wellness. Now, working with you and in this field and where we are now, that has brought me to a whole new universe of wellness. That's why we do what we do today.
Yeah.
But just on that topic of wellness, what it was your journey? I know your journey for regenerative medicine we've spoken about, but was your journey to get to this wellness, was that something you always had in your head? You wanted people to be well, or were you looking at specific conditions that they had?
Well, I think the word there is universe, that you spot on hit there. And this is like space travel.
Yeah.
It's really like that. And that is what is so challenging in medicine, because there are many ways to get to the same goal. In medicine, unfortunately today, and I'm sure our listeners will agree with this, we've lost a lot of that magic of just a word of reassurance, a word of just explaining, taking that 2 minutes longer just to guide and to point out an exact journey to the goal. And if you send anyone out of the door without his Google Maps in a foreign city, and you say, okay, go and find the main station now, you're going to have people that's very anxious, that's lost even before they step to, and they will tell you, I'm lost, I don't know where to go. All right. And that is a serious, serious problem we have in medicine in general. So I suppose when you talk about regenerative medicine and explaining a route, is one of the main issues. And what you did there, without perhaps knowing it with your clients, is give them a Google Maps to their goal. And just by having that security of you knowing to guide them, they have the confidence in not only you, but also in the treatment. And that is a huge problem we have today in medicine. And I suppose in regenerative medicine, what makes it so quantum and ununderstandable for a lot of people, and for people grabbing this little grassroots and that little grassroots and hope this is the next best thing, this is amazing treatment, that is a wonderful magic wand treatment, they're not, because it needs to be part of a big roadmap for recovery or rehabilitation or restoration or rejuvenation. And these are the different words that we will definitely cover in a few podcasts, because there are differences. And people sometimes are confused about the terminology, especially in medicine, where we use weird terminology sometimes, you know. But we need to have a clear understanding that wellness, in the end, is a quantum subject. It means nobody really understands it fully. Nobody can comprehend it fully. And everybody thinks they know how to get it. And we all can just do our best to gather the best route for yourself to reach that goal. And that's my advice that I would give people when we talk about wellness. You know, there are so many different ways to enhance wellness within person. Some people are more sensitive to the psychological ways of getting their wellness sensations. Others want to actual treatments. If they don't feel a bit of pain, they don't get their wellness feeling. Other people want to just be left alone to be well. All right. So we need to have so many different ways of understanding personality, etc. And I think that is what's making it such a weird subject for a lot of traditional doctors who are pure scientists and want to put you in a little box and you need to fit in there, and then they can diagnose that, and then they can treat it according to a guideline. When we talk about people and their wellness, it is a multidisciplinary action that you need to take. That's why me and you in our clinic here is just a small bit of a particular person's wellness. Some people, we might be all of their wellness. We can deliver all that they need, but some people will find perhaps nothing from our approach. So there are other specialists that, for instance, might do Reiki or might do yoga, and they would be 100% suitable to find the wellness just doing that. And if they come into my clinic, I possibly cannot offer them anything. So I think we need to recognize that we are dealing here with people, real people with real needs, with real differences. And we need to be honest to say, this is most likely not going to do it for you. And I think that is one thing that we learn to do in our clinic, and I'm pretty sure other colleagues are doing it as well, is to be able to assess the client, assess the problem, and then to assess the best options of treatment. And if you don't fit that you actually offer in your clinic, you should be able to tell that person, you know what, I think you should go for a good yoga class. I think you should go exercise. I think you should enroll in an athletic club and do football or whatever, if you think that is actually what that person needs, is a real honesty. All right. But when we really think about wellness, we have common denominators. And that's the interesting thing. That makes this actually interesting science and why you can approach this as a scientific subject. And that is the word neurotransmitter or neuroscience. In a way, wellness is the presentation of how good your neuroscience or neurohealth is. So it is the power of the mind over the body, the psychosomatic ability that we are born with. It is the soldier who just lost one arm being able to get up and shoot another few rounds. It is the athlete that actually has a fractured ankle get up and finish still within the first three finishing the race. Where do we get that? That is neuroscience. That lies within the ability of our brain to motivate our bodies beyond our physical ability. And when we talk about neuroscience, we talk about four neuromodulator hormones or scientifically proven neurotransmitters that controls a lot of this out-of-this-world reactions in our bodies. It gives us the ability above what anyone expects or the person, him or herself, expects. And that is the endorphins, the oxytocin, the dopamine, and the serotonin that's produced in our brains. They are also called neurotransmitters. And it says on the bottle what it does. It transmits into the body. It connects your brain with your muscles, with your tendons, with your whole motivation, with your personality, with your memory, and it has a huge effect on your way that you perceive wellness to be. And if you try to break it down even further, it is actually not that difficult. I'm just going to reach out here and just see where I've written this down. And what we do see is that when you have a production, or especially a healthy production, of these four hormones or neuroscientific transmitters, we see a very interesting change in the way we perceive our own health and how we perceive, how do I feel today? Do I feel good? Do I feel bad? Do I feel down? How do you feel? And we basically can see what is the effect of these neurotransmitters on my body, and what are the effect on my mind, and also on my life. So if I just start thinking about what is the effect of these neurotransmitters on my body, we have very good research and scientific support for the following statements. We know that it prevents heart disease, it lowers the stress hormones, it increases the brain endorphin production, it reduces pain and the effect on the thalamus and the pain centers of the brain. It soothes the nervous system. It makes me relax, in other words. It relaxes muscles. It has a muscle relaxing effect. And it is an incredible boost for my immune system and the way I can resist disease. On my mind, these factors are even more outspoken, because that is the hormones and the neurotransmitters I need to feel joy in my life or to generate joy. How do people get out of a war zone situation? How do people overcome that? How do countries overcome the effects of war? Right. Is when they find their joy and laughter back. Right. And that is the individual citizen finding a way to overcome what has just happened. The detrimental effect and the destruction of a war actually goes into that citizens and starting uplifting. I think a fantastic effect would be to looking at Germany and how post-Germany actually overcame their issues. The other countries that was involved, France, Italy, all the countries, the United Kingdom, how the citizens of those countries actually individually started to regenerate the feel-good hormones, and how as a country, these countries start to excel again with the economy, in the way they embraced social care, etc., etc. So in the mind, it increases the zest of life, that thrive for people to say, okay, I'm taking back control. I'm not going to let this war, my house is destroyed, I don't have a car anymore, but hey, I'm going to change this. That is what those four hormones in your brain can achieve, right? It reduces the stress and it uplifts the mood. And very important, it enhances resilience. How do I fight this loss of my arm? Or I've lost an eye. How do people get over that? Right, okay, treatment, yes, okay, fair enough. But it is about themselves, their journey in the universe, where they're on their way to find solution. All right, that is driven by these four hormones in their own brain. If you look at the effect of these four hormones on life in general, and how we experience life, we know that this hormones that's produced in the brain make me bond with people, like-minded or even unlike-minded. It gives me a purpose to connect with people and seek help, support, but also be able to defend. So this bonding work in very different ways. It strengthens relationships. Without these four, or when you have a reduced amount of these excitations of your endorphins, of your serotonin, of the dopamine, when you have a reduction of this, we find people become depressed. They go into a low mood, they pull away from other people. They don't connect with other people. They don't build relationships. All right. It attracts people to you if you have a healthy amount of these endorphins. Right, and it enhances teamwork. The way we can work together as humans completely relies on our wellness. So it helps me also to diffuse conflict. When I see danger coming or a conflict situation developing, my wellness is what stands between me and a huge fight breaking out. Right, and then also, very importantly, it promotes group binding, which is a powerful thing in humans. We see it in the animal kingdom. We see how packs of lions can hunt together. Without even speaking, they know exactly what to do. We as humans have that ability as well of working together in a group. So wellness is actually, in a way, defined by this, just what I told you. You know, it is so wide that you cannot even imagine the end of it. It is a quantum science in the sense that it's multi-level, multidisciplinary. It is multidimensional, and that makes it such a beautiful art, because it is for the practitioner, the wellness practitioner, to find that universal solution for that person, picking different aspects that might be important for the roadmap. You need to give that Google map to that person to reach the end goal.
Hi folks, just interrupting with a little reminder. Today's podcast is a basic introduction to regenerative medicine and a little bit about our story and how we got involved with this field. We also touch on wellness and feeling good and how this ties in with both progressive functional medicine and a more traditional approach. If you want to find out more about anything we're talking about today, you can get in touch via email at info@humanregenerationproject.com or visit the website at www.humanregenerationproject.com. Thanks again for listening and enjoy the rest of the podcast. It's fascinating for me to hear such a highly qualified physician and surgeon talk about things like bonding and teamwork and happiness and feeling good. It's not entirely unique, but it's very, very interesting to hear, because it's not all facts and figures and numbers and treatment A equals resolution B. It's about the end goal, which is what I'm getting here. For what I see coming through, there's two sides to this. If you feel good, you can actually elicit a physiological response in your body. Feeling good, you can change these neurotransmitters, which is what you're saying there.
Absolutely.
And on the other side of that, which is just as important, if you have a deficiency in these neurotransmitters, and like a lot of the stuff I've been hearing lately is related to things like head trauma or disease, degenerative disease and stuff like that, that can actually physiologically affect these neurotransmitters. If you treat those issues, then you can cause yourself to feel good. So there's two really important sides to this.
You remember, there's one thing that people sometimes come to you and they expect you to do everything. There is very clearly something here that you can do, the client, you can do, but that is also what I can do. And it is the combination of these two things that brings the outcome, that brings a successful outcome. When you have a situation where the client feels, well, the doctor must do everything, and I'm going to sit back and I will judge if this is working, guess what? You're not going to have any joy from that. If the doctor is not involved and not excited about or not interested to actually go into those levels which I just discussed and seek out those points that is missing in the armor of that person, and you cannot identify, and it's your job to identify that. That's why your client trusts you to come and talk to you. Decide, what can you do? I don't feel well, or my face doesn't look good. I've got lots of wrinkles and lines, or my knee is sore. I have a cartilage damage. My ankle is sore. I damaged my Achilles tendon 4 years ago. It is your job to be well-trained, to be able to identify exactly what are missing in this picture of wellness for this person, and then to select, according to best practice, the solution that will help. But then there is the other part of what the client must do. So yes, I can do a regenerative treatment on that tendon, but if you're not going to go home and follow the physiotherapy advice and exercise that tendon and make the tissue grow, we're not going to get a proper outcome in the end. So yes, it is from both sides to work together towards a goal. And this is something interesting, Dan, and I hope that people by now get the message. There is not one single wow magic wand treatment. It is not stem cells in a stem cell based therapy alone. It is not the growth factors only. It is not the surgery that's still needed for that knee injury. It is not implanting a prosthesis. It is not only doing a surgical reduction of a breast or enhancing the breasts only that brings wellness to that person. It is that teamwork between practitioner and patient, and the practitioner giving the patient a clear roadmap with a clear expectation. Sometimes we miss expectations. We need to be clear about that as well, right? But with a clear expectation, and that brings me back to the point you very eloquently made there, is that when your client understand the roadmap, you see better results.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it brings us back again to the point that I made earlier on, in that one, when a client came to me, and now I see the exact same model when a client comes to you, it's obviously about the assessment of the condition that they present with. So an injury or hair loss or skin, wrinkles and lines, whatever it is. But almost more important, if not as important, is not a psychological analysis, but like you say, the big picture view of what's going on here. And what I notice you do very, very well is meet the client on their level. You don't meet them as Dr. Sam, the surgeon, or Dr. Sam, the restoration expert or specialist. You meet them as Dr. Sam, the person who is here to listen to what you have to say and then help you figure out how to fix it. And you do give them the information and the knowledge, obviously in a manageable bite-sized way, but you also give them the confidence that they can explore this with you, and they can say, Sam, what am I dealing with here? Like, what's the story here? And when they get that knowledge, that gives them the peace of mind to know that, okay, there's something we can do here. And then, like you've said, that gives them the feeling that they own this a little bit as well. They own this issue. It's not Sam is going to fix this for me. It's this is mine, and this man is going to help me. And I mean, that should be when you go to have your car fixed or whatever it is, there's experts, and they obviously know more than you, which is why you go to them. But if you feel like you're part of that journey, you're a lot more inclined to understand it, to appreciate it, and to benefit in the long term. And what we're talking about here is results, is feeling good. You can go for a cold and recover from your cold and still not feel good. But if you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, and you're on a journey and you've achieved something, that's wellness. That's feeling good.
Yeah. Dan, it that discussion opens quite a contentious issue in aesthetic medicine, which we are struggling from a regulator's point of view, a government point of view, client safety point of view, and in general, the public that's being exposed to this field are actually just left exposed. There is a huge difference between, facetious by saying this, between a beautician offering a filler treatment and Botox treatment to a client and a qualified doctor doing that. The question is always, oh well, but the doctor is going to be much more expensive, you know, and why can't the beautician do it? It's just the small little injections, you know, why can't you do it? It is about this point that you made, and that is about the wellness point. It's about the overall effect of that treatment and considering and reading that person. If you don't have that medical background training in psychology, in psychiatry, if you didn't do your modules to recognize the warning signs and the red lights in people who should not have those treatments in the first place, right? If you're not qualified, then is that a good enough excuse to say, but I didn't know? I did this peel on this person and now she's got very bad pigmentation. I'm sorry that you got that, but I didn't know that her skin will turn out that way. How could I know? Yes, how could you know? Because you were not trained in dermatology.
Yeah, ignorance is not really
the ignorance excuse, is yeah. Not an excuse. And unfortunately, in our modern industry, and we see it now not only in fillers and Botox, where more and more unqualified people start to enter the field of regenerative medicine. Now, some are also offering microdermabrasion, derma rollers, which is causing severe scarring in treatments, caused by treatments being done in these salons. And I sit here in the clinic having to resolve those pigmentations, having to resolve those complications that develop from this. And their excuse is, I didn't know. That's why it should not be done by beauticians and aestheticians. And interesting enough, we will have a good podcast on that. I just saw a paper coming out issued by the European Union as guidelines from February next year, where there will be guidelines for regulation of this industry. So the EU on government level recognize this danger that the public is exposed to, and it should be stopped. No, I cannot imagine that people can put up a garage without the license and just pouring petrol into any car. I cannot imagine that the government will tolerate, for instance, a person opening a school without a license, and just because they're good in education or can work with kids well, they can just get kids to and parents to pay for education, and a new school starts on every corner. I can't imagine that happening. But for some strange reason, in medicine, in my field of regenerative medicine, it's absolutely tolerated. There's a total blind eye to these people doing these treatments without being properly qualified, not having even a degree or diploma in actually allowing them, and completely out of guidelines. But I suppose, in a way, it's tolerated because it turns VAT and tax and business, and that's a total different
money
dangerous
money,
way. Money.
Money is money.
So I suppose we will have a chat about that at some stage, but it is, if you think about it, it is shocking to think that in our modern time, in modern Ireland and in modern United Kingdom, that these treatments are performed by people that is not fully qualified, that at the least do not have the training to assess the psychological effect of treatments in a patient.
Would you be in favour, we're definitely getting a little bit off topic, and we'll have a huge podcast on this, but just a question on that to answer something important. Would you be in favour of some sort of system or modality to train these people? Because obviously they you get the ones who just want to do business, they're business clinics, they're not medical clinics. But would you be in favor of some sort of system to train people? You mentioned beauticians, aestheticians, not specifically picking on them, but to get them to a level where they could offer these treatments? Or do you think that's just out of reach unless you are a fully qualified medical doctor? I know this is not an ego thing, this is not a professional ego where I'm a doctor and you're not a doctor, don't do these treatments. It is about the wellness of the client at the end of the day. And I've seen the same cases you've seen come in here who have been poorly handled and have life-changing results, infections, scarring, pigmentations that they're never going to get rid of. And that will affect their wellness and their feel-good. So do you think there's a way of bridging that gap between people who are not classically medically trained to be able to, like, I mean, I'm involved in this field. I'm not a doctor, but I don't do the treatments. I assist and I'm involved in the research and the promotion and the discussion around these treatments, and on my own level involved in obviously some form of regenerative medicine. But do you think there should be a facility for someone like me or someone like a beautician to bridge the gap in a small way? Or do you think they just need to kind of bite the bullet? If they want to do these treatments, you have to go the long way about
well,
it.
Well, I don't have to tell you what I think. We have a very interesting measure in medicine that we use, and we call it peer review. It is, in other words, what the majority of colleagues would think. And I think this is something, a very interesting point that you raised there. How does other countries and colleagues and similar qualified doctors than myself think about this in other countries? And it is an absolutely no for any beautician, aesthetician, nurse without qualification, pharmacist without qualification, to enter into this field. Why? France, you need to be a specialist to even do Botox. Not even every GP is allowed. You need to have special training as a general practitioner. Forget about nurses and aestheticians and beauticians in France to do these treatments. You will be jailed. That's it. It's illegal. Germany, the same. You would see the same in many of the European countries. In nearly all the states of the United States of America, you will not find a nurse injecting Botox or fillers. Go to Singapore, go to Asia, go to Japan. Go to most of the developed countries in this world. Go to the UAE even. Go and find the countries and that actually allows nurses and beauticians to do treatments. You will see that you won't find them. Why? It is not best practice. It is not in the best interest of the person, of the patient coming into you looking for a safe treatment. A lot of times people will look, and I might do a hysterectomy, or I've done appendicectomy, or I've done ovarectomy, or whatever. And people might look at the procedure and say, oh, well, that looks so easy. It's step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, to step 300, and that's how you do it. Oh, I can do that. It is not about performing it. It is when you hit an artery and you have a sudden unexpected bleed. It is when you hit a nerve, or when you cause an unexpected or expected complication or side effect. How to manage it. And this is where the cookie crumbles. This is unfortunately where people comes in with horrific side effects and complications after treatment at a clinic where the practitioner was not qualified. They did not recognize the injury. They did not recognize the complication in development. And this is why those countries and the peer review in those countries do not allow unqualified, non-medical trained people to do treatments. There's a very good reason they've learned. They have been there where these things were not controlled or regulated. They've seen citizens with lifelong scarring and complications left because of an unqualified person doing a training and looking at it and say, oh, Botox is easy. Just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 little injections. Anyone can do that. Yes, exactly. But what do you do when there's a complication? That's what we see here, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
That's what comes into our doors. We don't see the people when it goes well. They luckily go home and they're happy with the treatment. But it's the ones that comes in with the scarring, the keloid, the pigmentation, the hyperpigmentation, the contractions, those are the ones, unfortunately, that are the witness to this industry which is not regulated.
Yeah, it's a huge topic, and we'll definitely have to break this down and go into the legislation a little bit further. Just to finish this, to wrap this up on a positive note, with wellness and with feeling good, for you personally, what do you get from this? When someone comes in here and you're able to help them with their wellness, we won't say procedures or treatments, whatever it is that you manage to do, or any professional, but you specifically, what do you get from it? What's the benefit for you?
Dan, the answer is a reciprocal effect for both patient and doctor. When I see results, when I, for instance, do a hair restoration treatment and did a transplant for a person, and it is a guy with a frontal hair loss. And I see that person maybe 9 months later again and 18 months later. And that person walked into the clinic 18 months after the transplant, radiating with the confidence of life, the wellness absolutely clearly radiating from that person. That, I suppose, stimulate my endorphin, my oxytocin, my serotonin, my dopamine levels in my brain just goes through the roof.
So your wellness increases.
My wellness is just absolutely turbo boosted on that moment. And that is really the answer. When I experience that and I see the result of a treatment where we reach that goal, following that Google map to the end goal, and then seeing the face of the person that arrived, that actually realized, I'm here, I got it, I look it, I feel it, that is my reward. Now, that inspires me to give an even better roadmaps to other people in the future, because I learned from that map. We would sit down and say, listen, what do you think was good? What was bad? You know how we work with our clients. We would definitely ask them, what do you think was the worst day? What was bad about the procedure itself? Is there anything that we can improve? Because that's improving our roadmap, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
So this is a learning experience for us. It's not just sending somebody out into the darkness and say, listen, I hope this worked for you. No, we have confidence. We have the ability. We put a lot of effort into training our staff. I put a lot of effort into training myself and on an academic level, achieve a level of degree and of experience that I can reflect on myself and listen, I am comfortable and I feel honest when I say to a person, I can help you, or I'm telling you, unfortunately, I can't help you. Can I refer you to somebody that might be able to help you? I will never do a treatment if I don't think that person is going to arrive with the Google map I have in mind. If I see that that road is a fork anywhere in that road, I will be the first to say, I don't know. I absolutely don't know what to tell you or what is the best advice here. Can we get a second opinion? And I think that gives me confidence in myself that I know exactly where my limits are of my abilities and skill and knowledge. But I also can reassure the client that I know my limits. And I think a lot of practitioners work like that. And I think, again, that is something that comes with your training, that comes with your ethics, that you actually educated into your training. It is not something that you can learn. You study it, and then it becomes part of you. It becomes part of your personality. It becomes part of your professional conduct to do exactly that.
Beautiful. You're a poet, sir. Listen, it's been a fascinating conversation. I'm really looking forward to the next one. So just thank you for your time, and we'll see you next time.
Good. Thank you, Dan.
If you'd like more information on anything we discussed in this podcast, or if you'd like to talk to somebody about regenerative medicine or wellness, you can find us on www.humanregenerationproject.com or contact us through Facebook or Instagram. If you think someone you know might benefit from listening to this conversation, please just pass it along. Thanks for listening. See you next time.